What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, colleagues, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. My name is Daryl.
And this is Jennifer.
And we have a very special guest lined up for you today. This guest has made a name for himself throughout the entire world. He's known for creating unique eyewear that people love, and hands down, he wears the best suits in the optical industry. Folks, please welcome our friend, Mr. Jason Kirk of Kirk & Kirk Eyewear. How are you doing today?
Hi, thank you for having me. Yeah, I'm great. Thank you.
We're so excited to get to know your brand, Kirk & Kirk Eyewear. So tell us a little bit about the story behind what you do.
Well, Kirk & Kirk Eyewear is Jason Kirk and Karen Kirk. And we're based in Brighton in England. And, well, we're third generation in optics. And my grandfather started the British manufacturing industry back in the 1920s. And my dad was an optician as well. But they always brought something new to the industry. Whenever they brought something out, whenever they delivered something into optics, it innovated. And that's our goal, is to innovate with the products that we do, with the way that we communicate, with the way that we run our business. So that's what we try and do. We try and bring something new to the optician and to the consumer.
And how long have you been doing this for, roughly?
Well, Karen and I have been in optics for nearly 25 years. Wow. That hurts as it comes out. 25 years nearly next year, which is brilliant. And we are thoroughly enjoying ourselves still at this time. Kirk & Kirk has been going for 3 years. We're just about to launch our third collection at Silmo in Paris and at Vision Expo West. So yeah, we're kind of new with 25 years experience, which is fun.
So how did you decide to get into eyewear design?
Well, we stumbled into it really. I grew up in, as I just explained, really in a family of opticians and optometrists and manufacturers and designers. And I was not interested at all. I used to spend every Saturday with my dad in his practice, and it was a country practice, a very traditional medical practice. And I just, I didn't find it very exciting or very interesting, really. And then one day I was about, I guess I was in my early 20s. I'm giving away my age now. It's 25 years. Uh-oh. I was in my early 20s and Dad said, can you help me come and clear out the practice? And I found all these boxes at the back of the practice with lovely frames from the 1950s, 1960s, beautiful kind of upswept and blues and greens and all things that I'd never seen before. And I just couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe what I was finding. And I was like, Dad, what are you doing with these? He said, well, they're just frames that your grandfather designed that were never sold or were never produced. They were just prototypes. You can have them if you want them. And at the time, I was working for L'Oreal, doing sales and marketing. Karen was working for Saatchi. She was a graphic designer at the time. And we went out and we showed these beautiful old frames to the designers of the day, the fashion designers of the day. We had no idea who they were, people like Nick Coleman, Helen Story, who were big names, but we just didn't know who they were. So it was a lovely, naive approach. And they loved what we had. So we started putting sunglass lenses in old frames, and then they ran out really quickly. So we started copying old frames, and then that ran out really quickly. And then what we did for quite a period of time was find old acetates that were in limited edition from, say, the 50s or the 60s, and make new frames using old acetates. And we did that for a number of years, and that was really successful, and it allowed us to produce something unique. Nobody else had anything like what we were offering. But it became clear very quickly that the company was growing to the extent that we had to find a new way forward. And we started to look for new materials, new techniques, new ideas, to bring something special to the industry. And that's what we've always tried to do.
So talking about acetate, I know you kind of recently changed over to different types of materials. How did that decision come about?
Well, we were looking for new ways of producing glasses. There's a lovely heritage of old-fashioned production, which is very, very limited now and very, very difficult to get to. But there are some very, very skilled people around, and they carry with them an experience which is very hard to find these days in optics. And we wanted to find a way of using that experience but still innovate. And we looked at other materials and we wondered why pretty much every plastic frame was made of acetate or xyle. And we looked at other materials, and sure enough, as soon as you start playing with other materials, you find out pretty quickly why it is that people only produce frames in acetate. Once you start making frames using old-fashioned techniques and old-fashioned tooling, you find out very quickly that they break easily or that it's very hard to manufacture. And you have to find manufacturers who are prepared to put in time and effort to find solutions to these difficult challenges. So we started looking at acrylic, and we went back through history and looked at the different materials that have been made, things like Optil and other materials that had tried to change the industry, but kind of they lasted for a few years, and then for various reasons they got pushed to one side. Either they were breakable or they catch fire or something like that. Yeah, that's kind of not that practical when you're wearing a pair of glasses and they catch fire. But so pretty soon people let those go. But we looked at acrylic, and every manufacturer that we spoke to said, no, we can't make it. It's too difficult to manufacture, except for one. And that one manufacturer said, well, let's just study it together. And we worked for about 3 or 4 years trying to create a grade, special chemical formula of acrylic from which we could manufacture in the old-fashioned way. And once we'd actually managed to get the chemical formula right, then we had to sit with the manufacturer again. And that took about another 2 years before we could actually get the way of making the frames the way that they should be. So it was a real challenge, but it's a beautiful, beautiful material. There are two main reasons. There are lots of reasons to use acrylic and not acetate, but two main reasons. One is acrylic frames are incredibly light and really, really comfortable to wear. So you can have something that looks chunky and looks as though it's weighty in every sense of the word, except for the sense of the word, which means weight. They weigh nothing. And it's brilliant as well if you've got a heavy set of lenses, you've got a strong prescription. They're just beautiful to wear and comfortable. The other main reason is that we have access to a range of colours and a range of finishes that you just don't get in acetate. So all you have to do is hold one of our frames and you can feel the difference between a Kirk & Kirk frame and every other frame on the market. You understand why acrylic is so lovely.
Do patients have to take care of the frames differently? Can they use the same cleaners and the same amount of heat exposure, things like that?
Yes, there's nothing really for the patient that's challenging at all in wearing them. Just like you have any frame, whether it's metal or plastic or whatever that plastic is, whether it's acetate or acrylic or wood, you have to look after it. If you've got a car, you don't drive it into a wall. So, you know, it's the same principle. If you've got something that you love, you look after it. For the optician, you have to adjust it differently, but it behaves kind of like horn, really. So if you want to adjust the temples, you simply have to make it very, very hot and it goes soft. It's really, really easy to adjust. And then you just pop it in water and it holds its shape perfectly. And that's absolutely great. And when you're glazing it, you just glaze the lenses a little bit small. You cut them a bit small and you pop them in cold. So it's super easy. You just have to know what you're doing.
So Jason, let's talk more about the collections. I know you stated that there are two different collections that you have. What are they and what was the thought process behind designing those?
Well, an interesting process really, because for the very first collection that we launched as Kirk & Kirk, we were conscious that it was our first collection as Kirk & Kirk and it needed to carry the DNA of our design. So we launched a collection called Vivarium. Both of our optical collections, we have a sunglass collection as well, but both of our optical collections are acrylic. The Vivarium collection is really interesting because not only are the frames made of acrylic, but there's jewelry on the frames. So where you might have a pin on the front of the frames, a traditional optical pin, we've worked with British jewelers to hand make these sterling silver animals that they're three-dimensional, so they stand proud of the frame. And we have a stallion, we have a ram, we have a fly, there's a lion, there's a dog, and there are some more animals being launched at Vision Expo West as well. And so you can have them you can have them in sterling silver, or you can have them in 9-karat gold. And so we wanted something that really reflected our Englishness, very kind of like the things that we were into, Englishness, fashion, about being innovative, working with craftsmen, so working with jewelers. And if you look at the colours and the materials that we've used, there's a metallic hue to the Vivarium, and there's also a matte hue as well. And it's very kind of, there's a little element of dandy, of the way that those kind of 19th century Victorian dandies love their clothing, love their fashion. But they're not in any way flashy. They're kind of understated as well. So it's got that kind of English modesty side to it. It's a really interesting collection. And again, it's different to anything that's out there, but in a kind of understated, subtle way. So the thing that I hope you'll find with every Kirk & Kirk frame is that you easily recognize it as a Kirk & Kirk frame. There are no labels on the outside. It's recognizable through its design and through its craftsmanship, rather than having to be kind of overt about what it is. The other collection that we've launched is the second and most recent collection is the Kaleidoscope collection. And it's so cool because of the colours that we use and the bright, transparent colours, which is what Karen and I have become known for, I think, over the years, is colourful collections. And they just feel amazing to wear. Right? They're chunky, they're big, they're substantial, but they weigh nothing and they feel good and they have impact. And you can be as daring or as understated as you like. So we have one part of the collection, there's a charcoal colour, which is a grey, but it's transparent and it's still different to anything else that's out there. And then you can do this ocean, which is bright blue with a turquoise blue behind it, with a meld of colours that really, really stand out. But if you wear them with the right clothing, with the right attitude, and you feel the frame in the way that it's part of you rather than just like the frame is wearing you, then they're totally natural to wear. It's just a really interesting collection. You can have lots of fun, and there are lots of different parts of the collection which do different things. It's really interesting watching people try them. We do a lot of trunk shows. We go out and talk to a lot of people and listen to a lot of people, more importantly. And the reactions that you get from consumers when they put them on, you can tell when the frame is right for somebody because their face lights up. And it's as simple as that. And Kirk & Kirk is always about how you feel when you put the frame on, not just how the frame looks, because, you know, frankly, you can walk into an optician and there are going to be a good independent optician who's going to have 50 frames that suit most faces. You know, there's lots of competition out there and there are lots of easy things to wear. But if you find something that makes you feel amazing when you put it on, then that's what you're looking for. And that's what we're trying to do. Deliver something different, something special that makes the consumer feel really amazing.
Now, you mentioned consumer. Paint the picture of the person that wears Kirk & Kirk eyewear.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of variation with the person that wears Kirk & Kirk eyewear, but the very first thing is they're not driven by labels. So they will buy a product because they love the product. They love the way it looks. They love the way it feels. They love the way it makes them feel. That's the very first thing. They're going to be creative. They're going to be interesting. They're going to be independent, probably slightly irreverent. Age group, it's probably kind of late 20s and then kind of no upper ceiling, really, because I see people of all ages wearing our glasses. I guess probably the main part is probably 35 to 50, something like that. But it's people that are comfortable and confident and just enjoy eyewear. They're just into eyewear. And they're looking for something different. You know, they're not afraid to step out of the box a little bit. There are so many collections that are just kind of similar. They're just the same. And you go into an optician and they've got like five different variations of the same frame in different collections. And that just seems to me like, just seems unnecessary. And in days when opticians are challenged by other people down the street, by other opticians, by online, by chain stores, you know, that it's really, really important to have something different.
So where are you drawing your inspiration for next? What do you see as the future of your brand and what's taking your inspiration to the next level?
I think we found our identity within a kind of very specific area, which is that Victoriana kind of fashion, a little bit steampunk, without going too much in that direction. But it's never, we never really start with like one starting point. So, you know, we have to make all our frames look vintage, or if we're going to interpret vintage, it will be very much in the Kirk & Kirk way. It'll be a different way to anybody else. Where are we going next? Do you know, I think people have responded really, really well to our, not colour, I guess, kind of the daring, interesting variations in our colour. And the combinations which nobody else has in their collections. So I think we're going to work on that a little bit more. We've got lots of ideas for the next 2 or 3 years that are all coming together and using interesting materials and innovating and changing the way that people think about glasses and the way that people feel about glasses. But right now, our inspiration is all about colour. It's all about the way that certain colours make you feel, the way the things that certain colours suggest. If you take red can mean so many different things to so many different people, and different types of red suggest different things, different moods, different feelings, different emotions. So it's playing with that idea of color and seeing how people respond to the colors and what we can do with that.
And how did you choose your colors for your eyewear, especially for the Kaleidoscope collection?
The thing about acrylic is we have a completely blank canvas. We can create colors. It's interesting, actually. The color goes right the way through the material. It's not like a surface coloring or anything. It goes right the way through. But we started from zero. I mean, we work with Pantone books and we can choose the actual colors that we want to do. And then when we're doing combinations, it's when you get the some colors in the Kaleidoscope collection which are double colors and some which are single colors. And when you take the double colors and you look at the color behind, it comes out when the light hits it. So for example, if you're in sunshine, strong sunshine, the frame can look different in different lights. So you've got a dark blue with a turquoise behind it. And sometimes it's a really strong second color and it's really complementary and different. And other times it's quite subtle and quite close. So the red, which is a flame red, has a pinky orange behind it. And sometimes that orange really contrasts with the red. And other times the pink is quite close to the red. So even within one material on one frame, it moves, it changes, it's different. We've got a color called Earth, which is a lovely chocolatey brown. And then behind it is a turquoise. And again, if you look in certain lights, you hardly see the turquoise, and then at other times it just zings out. And we work on things like eye color. So for example, if you've got blue eyes, the blue behind the brown just looks really amazing. It just brings your eyes out. So accenting colors according to people's facial colors and tones is really important too.
So with your really strong color story that you have right now, your use of Instagram, I mean, it just graphically, it's been an amazing response. Tell us a little bit about the Kirk & Kirk Instagram account and how successful you've been on social media.
Well, social media has been really important for us. It's been a great way to stay in contact with our existing customers and reach out to new people, whether it's with optical professionals or whether it's with consumers. We've only had our Instagram account for, it was less than 2 years. I think it's about 18 months, but we've got 8,000 followers at the moment and it's going up all the time. And the response is it's great. I mean, people are communicating with us, talking to us, responding to us, asking us questions, interacting with us. It's absolutely fantastic. So Instagram's been a really, really important tool, and it's important that we listen and evolve with that tool and with the other tools that we use as well. This is everything's changing so quickly. We have to change with it. Retailers have to change with it. Consumers are adapting, and we have to listen and respond to the consumer.
Do you have a tip that you'd like to give eye care providers or other opticals out there on how to achieve the kind of social media success that you have?
I think it's important just to go out and express yourself, just to be yourself. You've got to find your own voice. And there are lots of great retail opticians out there who have a very clear personality and voice that comes across on their Instagram account, but just be yourselves and just, you know, enjoy it. I think that certain the public responds in a certain way to certain people. So if you create your retail environment, but you can do that online, and there are lots of different ways of doing that. I don't mean that literally. It's like, it's not like you have to show people what your shop looks like. It's about the mood. It's about the vibe. You know, is your store relaxed? Is it a little bit uptight? Are you very, very medical? Are you really kind of cool and funky? What kind of frames do you carry? What kind of brands do you carry? What does that suggest? How independent are you? All those things you can get across in a really subtle way through social media, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or other channels. And the channels, each channel does something different, and people communicate with you in a different way through each channel, and they go up and down. I mean, you know, who knows what's going to happen with Instagram over the next few years? It's evolving, it's changing. Will it become increasingly important? Will it disappear? Twitter is more about conversation and interaction. Will that become more or less important? Who knows? Who knows how those things are? But just relax and enjoy it, because I think, you know, we were. Nervous about it, anxious about it at the beginning. We didn't know what we were doing. I mean, nobody knew what they were doing on Instagram, like however long ago it was, 3 or 4 years ago. So just go with it. But it's a really, really important part of the sale. I mean, we have this conversation with British opticians a lot, because there are very few British opticians that are really communicating anywhere on social media, let alone Instagram. And it's about understanding what your consumer really wants. It's about listening and understanding how the consumer buys or how they interact in every sphere. It's not just in optics, in every sphere. So many people now are starting their purchase online. That's to say that, you know, if they're interested in glasses, eyewear, whatever you want to call it, and whatever you want to call it is really important because that's how they search. You need to be there when they search. You need to be part of the answer that they find. I mean, where do you find great independent eyewear brands? Well, let's go online, let's have a little look. And there's a certain number of opticians will come up. Perhaps they'll search a geography, a local area or something. You've got to come up. And then what they see has got to be inviting, whether it's through your humor or your environment or the pictures that you show or the products that you're talking about or whatever it is. That's where it all starts. And I read some really interesting features about people that are very, very present online and also have retail stores. How much of the purchase is online? So it may be that somebody actually buys the product in store, but how much of that process is actually happening online beforehand? Well, it is. A lot of it is. People are looking, searching, discovering, finding new information. They'll go to a retail store. They'll try things on. They'll get good professional advice, what lenses fit, work in which frames, what can't you do in other frames, getting a proper, decent, independent eye test, all that stuff. We know that that's really, really important. And the fact that things are moving online doesn't negate from that importance, but we have to adapt. As an industry, we have to move forward and adopt the way that our consumer is buying. It doesn't make the professional medical side of it any less important. And once they've left, and they've left with however many frames from you and however many lenses from you, the relationship continues. The relationship continues online. And you want that consumer to be part of your family. And hopefully that consumer wants you as an eye care professional to be part of their family as well. So it's so, so important that we live in worlds that are constantly really evolving much, much faster, it appears to me, than it did when I was starting off in business. And we have to evolve with it.
I agree strongly with you, Jason. The social media component plays a big part in any kind of practice that you're in. But on the flip side, how does it work with the independent doctor of optometry? Do you find that social media connected you to more optometrists than without having it?
Yes, it has. I mean, it's allowed us to discover optometrists and optometrists to discover us. And I can see different individuals respond to us and interact with us in different ways. But it's great to be able to have that contact. I mean, we're really, really hands-on. Both Karen and I, you can talk to Karen and I regularly on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. And just have a direct interaction. And we love that because that's how we learn, you know, what people feel, what people like, what people don't like, what people want to see or don't want to see. That's really, really important. And so, you know, sometimes we have people talking to us about the measure of the kind of the optical professional medical side of things against the frame side of things. And that's how we all learn together and all move forward together. It's really, really important.
So globally now, how many countries would you say carry your frame line?
I think we're probably in about 20 countries now. You know, it takes time. It takes time to build a brand. And then in the current economic environment, you know, let's be honest about this. It's not easy for anybody at the moment, especially for retailers. And so people are very, very careful about what they carry. And they want to be sure about a brand, about a product. And most independent opticians now are carrying fewer brands. And they're doing them well. So they're doing them in depth. And so people wait until they've got the opportunity to find a space to do a brand properly. So that's great. I mean, we've had a huge response. We're very, very happy with the number of retailers that we're selling to and the number of countries that we're in at the moment. Some of the best stores all over the world. It was great.
I know you mentioned the current state of the economy. How hard was it on Kirk & Kirk in regards to the UK leaving the EU?
What a great question. You know, the UK hasn't left the EU yet. We've had a vote and the public has voted by a very, very slim majority to leave Europe. Now, I'm not a political expert, but there's a whole process that we have to go through, which starts off with an activation of a clause through Parliament to actually activate a 2-year notice period. So the thing is that nothing's really happened. The only thing that's happened is that people's attitudes have changed slightly. I think that a lot of people woke up the day after the vote, couldn't believe what had happened, didn't really understand what had happened. I mean, I make no bones about this. I think it's absolute madness for us to leave Europe. I don't understand why anybody would have voted for us to leave Europe. And I think a lot of people who voted to leave suddenly realized that it was kind of it was all based on apocryphal stories, and a lot of it was fabricated by the people who were trying to get England or Britain out of Europe. And that's been quite hard on us as a nation, because I think that we are suddenly realizing now that we made a bit of a stupid mistake. What's happened to the economy in the immediate aftermath is that people are not spending money because they're just nervous. They just don't know what's going to happen. What will happen over the next few years, I don't know. But the real effect of leaving Europe will only be felt in about 2 or 3 years once we actually, if we actually leave Europe. And I really hope that people see sense and think about it again and try and find a way to kind of reverse what the vote suggests. What difference does it make to us? Well, initially, the pound got much, much weaker, which is a big advantage for us exporting, because our frame suddenly became much cheaper to the American and European clients. So it's a great time to be buying our products. There's a good plug. But that's true. But then it's much more expensive for us to buy them because we manufacture in France. So we lose out on the exchange rate on that side. So if anything, it's an immediate slight advantage, but it doesn't really make that much difference because we lose in one direction and gain in the other direction. I think it's just anxiety and uncertainty, you know, in the same way that you've got your electoral issues coming up as well, which I won't comment on.
We have plenty of anxiety on our side. But
well, I'll let you guys deal with that, but I hope that you make the right decision.
Yeah, we'll have this conversation in November.
Yeah, let's do that. Then. Save it for another podcast.
So speaking about the local British eyewear scene, tell us a little bit about what your company is doing to get more involved with independent eyewear there.
British eyewear, or British retail eyewear, has traditionally been very, very conservative. There are not that many really good retailers, really good independent retailers here in the UK. So you've got some strong chains, just like you have everywhere, and a small number of independent retailers that would stand up on the world stage and compete. And I've, with Karen, we've worked very, very hard over the years to try and take things forward because my grandfather did, and because my dad did, and because it's important to us to see the industry move forward. It's been very, very slow, but now there's a new show in the UK, which is called 100% Optical, which has been going for 3 years, and there are good independent designers coming over and exhibiting at this show. British opticians are coming and having a look, which is great, because traditionally, they haven't travelled all that much. There aren't many British opticians that go to Silmo, which is really very, very close. It's in Paris, which is easy to get to for most British opticians. Or Milan, they don't go to Mido. So this is an opportunity. 100% Optical is doing a good job. And we've noticed in the last year or so that there are more good independents opening up, and that presents an opportunity for independent brands to come to the UK. A lot of the best independent brands don't even have reps here because the market doesn't justify it. So it's kind of catch 22 and very challenging. I'll freely admit that we haven't had a rep here. The people that we deal with on a very personal basis. We go and see them whenever we need to go and see them, or we see them at the international trade shows because they're there. You know, anybody of any good standard is out looking for frames at the best shows. So we see most of them when we go to Paris, but we do go and see some people. In the last 6 months or so, we've launched Kirk & Kirk Consult. And Kirk & Kirk Consult is very directly to help independent opticians move forward. Just like any problem that people have in any walk of life, the first thing is to recognise the problem. So independent opticians in the UK, I'm sure they're probably doing all right and making a bit of money, but that's kind of dangerous. Because when you're doing okay, you're complacent and you don't see the competition coming up behind you. And the vast majority of independent opticians in the UK still carry all the kind of Luxottica and all the brands that you're going to find in Specsavers and Vision Express, who are the big chains here, all the brands that you're going to find online much cheaper than at the independent. And that's a real problem. They need to differentiate themselves. So we try and help them understand how to differentiate themselves through their environment, in store and out of store locally, through the products that they have. So trying to help them have an offer which is, and we do this very independently. It's not like, oh, you have to have Kirk & Kirk and these are our friends, you have to have them as well. It's very looking at the market that they have, that their environment, their neighbours, who's in the community, where they are, and thinking about what kind of brands they could intelligently put in there, which would allow them to sell commercially, to have good products and do good business, but also to allow them to differentiate themselves, to give people a reason to go to them and to no one else, not to buy online, not to go to Specsavers, but to buy from the independent optician. That also includes, we've touched on social media already, but that also includes how they communicate outside of their stores, whether it's online, offline, marketing, advertising. But people need hand-holding. We're there to offer that service and to help people. And it's a real genuine desire to help people move forward, because our industry is really under threat, particularly in the UK. But we see it everywhere. But particularly in the UK, independents just are not moving forward, or are very slow to move forward, with the exception of a few really, really good ones who are doing us proud. And that's great. But they're few and far between. But, you know, having said that, when we started off in the early 90s, there weren't good independent opticians in the US. And there weren't very many good independent opticians in France. And now the whole environment has really shifted. And there are some brilliant, brilliant opticians in the most obscure places. And they're doing good business, which is really encouraging. So British Optics needs to look at that and take a lead from that.
You know, I just totally agree with you. We're having very much the same issue in America, where it feels like the independent optometry practice may be a major threat. But we see so many people successfully rising to the top. And I feel like the situation, the environment, the millennial consumer, we're at a place where independent could really completely blow chains out of the water if we really just grab hold of it right now. So it's great hearing that you see the same thing happening on your side. And we've just got to help people understand how to grab the reins, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. People have got to move forward. And it's also, they've got to keep moving forward as well. There's no point in being complacent. It's very, very dangerous when you start doing well. That's kind of that's a challenge as well, because you've got to grow it. You've got to maintain it. And that's something that we try and help people do over here.
So what are your thoughts of the Warby Parkers of the world?
Well, I think Warby Parker do a great job at what they do. And I think it's a very natural, you know, we saw all the stuff on the various forums and blogs and stuff. And we continue to see people like, you know, slagging off all these big companies that are doing a great job of internet sales. You know, how would you market yourselves if you produce frames to a certain standard, and you know, you produce them in China, they're not great frames, but they're doing a job. You know, if you've got all that money and all that opportunity, of course you're going to say, yeah, we cut out the middleman, you don't need to pay all that money for frames, you're being screwed by all these guys. Of course you're going to market it like that, and there will always be a market for people to sell inexpensive frames. But it's our job as independent retailers and eyewear professionals to communicate to the public why they should spend more money on something that's beautiful, something that's well-made, something that makes them feel amazing. Because if we don't do that, if we don't educate the public, there's no reason why they will spend $500 when they can spend $100 with Warby Parker. It's our responsibility, and there's no point in us bellyaching about what Warby Parker do and other people. I can tell you, there are lots of other companies that are copycat Warby Parkers. I don't know, Bailey Nelson, for example, that are doing really well in the UK, and they're doing brilliantly. Why? Why is that happening? It's happening because independent opticians are sitting there going, well, you know what? We provide a great service. We're really professional. People need to come and see us. Then they'll see why. No, you need to get out there and communicate and be part of the community and explain to people what it is that you do. You can't sit back and wait for them to come to you to find out. You have to explain why. And if we don't do that, it'll be too late very, very quickly. Now, Warby Parker opened, you got me started now, so I could go on for quite a while on this one.
It's all right. Hey, man, it's your floor. You take it.
You know, I've got a lot of respect for Warby Parker. I know some of the people behind it, and they've done a really good job at doing what they do. And it started off as this internet phenomenon. And then they started opening one or two retail stores. Now they're up to whatever it is, 25 retail stores or maybe more. And now they're moving outside of the US. And the reason they're so successful is because people want it. You know, people want cheap frames. We've got the same problem here, and it's not the same thing. But at some point, I'm sure that Warby Parker or the equivalent will come over and do the same thing. But why do people go to Specsavers? Why do people walk into a store where the first thing that you hear is, so how much do you want to spend? £25, £40 or £60? No. People want to have, first of all, they want to have their medical requirement fulfilled. And then they want to feel good. They want to look good. They want to walk out feeling 2 inches taller. Why don't they do that? Why are they going to Specsavers or Warby Parker? Because we haven't told them, we haven't educated them why it is that they should spend some money on glasses. It's simple.
I think you're right. We have to show them high quality frames within our own optical that they can try on and feel the difference. Can I come in again, actually?
There's something else that I think is really, really important to say, okay? Because this is part of the responsibility of the independent optician. When you're choosing brands, the independent optician needs to know what they're actually looking at, what they're buying, and they need to buy responsibly, because there are also lots of brands out there where the quality of the frame is certainly no better than Warby Parker. And if we can't justify the products that we have for the prices that we have them in our stores, they shouldn't be there. And the product shouldn't be there, and the retailer won't be there for very long, because people will look at it and go, well, it's the same kind of product. There's just a bit more marketing in there. You know, if we're lying about where the frame is made, we've got a real problem on our hands if that ever happens. We've got to be super, super careful. So there's a huge responsibility on the buyer to make sure that they're really buying something of quality and really look into it, really drill the rep. And if you're not satisfied with the answer from the rep, phone the main company, speak to the designer, speak to the owner. Where is it made? Prove to me that it's made there. And I have no problems with frames being made in China or Korea or elsewhere. No problem with that at all, because you can get brilliant frames made in those places, and you can get frames made that are better quality than in Europe. But what I do have a problem with is integrity of the product and honesty of the product. It's really, really important that a product says where it's made, how it's made, that its price reflects its quality and everything that goes into it, whether that's a high price or a low price. As long as the optician and the consumer can make an informed decision, then we have to respect that decision. But it's got to be informed. We've got to communicate all the right information honestly.
I agree. We've really undermined ourselves by putting low quality frames with a designer name slapped on it and a high price tag. They'll feel very similar to inexpensive frames when a consumer tries them on.
Yeah.
So we appreciate a lot what you're doing, really giving people what quality should feel like, and it doesn't have to have a designer name on it. In fact, most of the times it won't, because it's a product that's not made to be mass produced and mass consumed.
And it's not just those brands, because the implication when you're talking about like designer names is household designer names, you know, kind of like Giorgio Armani, Calvin Klein, whatever, and the kind of Luxottica, Safilo products. But it's not just those. It's independent brands as well. You know, don't assume that because a brand presents itself as independent and has lots of pictures of beautiful people flouncing around by a river, that it's a beautifully well-made product that justifies the price tag that it's got on it. Examine the product, hold it, feel it. You should be able to sense as an eye care professional whether that product really does justify the price tag that it has. Because I can tell you that your consumer is doing tons of research. They probably know as much about glasses as you do. And they're going out, they're looking online, they're going around loads of different places, they travel, they go to different opticians. It's a really important decision. And it's not confined to those kind of household Luxottica brands. It's also the independent brands as well. So make sure what you offer the consumer is justified.
Now, Jason, I know you do a lot of work with various eyewear designers out there as far as designing eyewear for them. Have you ever designed any eyewear for big box companies like Luxottica or Safilo, or would you ever do that if you haven't?
No, we haven't. Would we ever do that? No real desire to. Well, we're working on some contracts at the moment for some absolutely amazing companies, which I can't announce at the moment. But we're doing some design work.
Come on, man, you can give us that exclusive information. Go ahead and let it out.
Well, maybe we'll save it for November.
Okay.
we're working on a couple of projects at the moment, but one in particular is a really, really exciting brand, and it's a brand that has integrity. And I've got to keep my mouth shut because I'm so excited about it that I'll give it away if I say anything else. But, you know, we don't have any desire to work with and help those companies which are analogous to our business. But on the other hand, like I said, all of these companies have their place. You know, Luxottica are clearly brilliant at what they do. Safilo are brilliant at what they do. Warby Parker are amazing at what they do. They just have a different place in the market, and we mustn't sit back and complain about it. We have to emphasize the positive aspects of our business and our products to the public so that they know and they can choose what they should be doing.
So I know you have some stuff that you can't tell us about yet, but are there any little previews or secrets? We know Vision Expo West is coming up in just a couple of weeks. Any big things going on at the show for you?
Well, we're really excited about Vision Expo West because we're going to have the full collection there. And we've also got some great, amazing new colors, particularly in the Kaleidoscope collection. We've got four new colours that nobody's seen. We've got some new shapes coming out. We've got some new additions to the vivarium collection. So there'll be lots of new stuff there. It's really interesting. You know, it's a very varied collection. So in the current collection, before we bring the new shapes and colours in Kaleidoscope, for example, there are 8 shapes and 9 colours. So there are 72 variations within that. There's lots of variation within the collection, and you can play on that. And it's interesting to see how people kind of like, you'll get some people that will go for a certain number of shapes, but they'll do them in all the colours. And then other people that will just do, like, they'll just vary it across all the shapes. So we make sure that whenever we do a show, we've got something new and exciting to show people. But also what's interesting as well is with the importance of social media, the calendar is changing, and it's less important to be punctual at these shows. It's important to have something new throughout the year, because people want something new and fresh all the time. There's pressure all the time to bring something new into your offer. So yes, we will have some new stuff at Vision Expo West. Yes, we'll have some new great stuff at Silmo as well. But there will also be new additions to the collections, and perhaps new collections coming out which don't necessarily get launched at a show. And that's something new to our industry, I think. We haven't really seen that before, except for the last sort of year or so, when people have had pressure to innovate all the time.
One thing that I do admire about your brand is definitely you and Karen's hustle. On social media, I recall seeing you on a road trip throughout Canada as well as the United States, just traveling from state to state to meet up with your clients and just show them the eyewear. I mean, I don't see that with a lot of independent designers or just people in general. I mean, I really have a high respect for someone that shows so much or puts so much into their brand.
Thank you. You know, it's the best part of what I do. I love it. I go out there, I listen to people. You know, you get feedback from the opticians, but you also get feedback from the consumers as well, which is amazing. And I get to see some of the most beautiful places in the world. I mean, you know, it's not all optics. I just went across the Rockies. I've always wanted to do that. It's just, you know, fantastic. I've been to Vancouver. I've been to Japan. I've been to some of the most beautiful places, which I wouldn't have experienced had I not been doing what I do now. So I'm very, very lucky, you know. And also my best friends in the world are through the profession that we're in. We're in an amazing profession where people are artistic, creative, they're medical, they're skillful, they're interesting people. You just look at the people that we get to hang out with every time there's a show. I look forward to these shows. I look forward to going out and traveling. We're just very, very lucky.
Well, your passion truly comes across, and you can see it express itself in your frame. So it's just very exciting to have you on and talk about your passion for this profession. Tell us how our listeners can get in touch with you if they want to find your brand or hook up with you on social media.
Okay, so the website is kirkandkirk.com. That's with A-N-D, Kirk and Kirk. And then we have our Instagram account, which is Kirk and Kirk as well. And we have a Facebook account and a Twitter account. And if they want to email us, they can come to us on info@kirkandkirk.com. And we'll be at the shows. We'll be at Vision Expo West. We'll be at Vision Expo East. We'll be at Silmo. So yeah, just please talk to us. Please tell us what you think, whether you're a client or not, whether you like what we do or not. I'm really interested to hear, because that's the only way we're going to learn and improve. So please talk to us.
Thanks, Jason, for hanging out with us today. Please send my love to your lovely wife, and we look forward to doing this again in November sometime.
Thank you for having me, and brilliant. Thanks for all the work that you're doing, because what you're doing is making a big difference to our industry as well, and we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast, and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.